Since the day that Shari Headley received a personal call from Eileen Ford saying that Shari had beat out thousands of hopefuls in the prestigious Ford Modeling Agency's Supermodel of the World contest, her star has continued to rise. Soon after, the Queens New York native got commercial offers to promote such companies as L'Oreal, Burger King, Macy's, and Avon, to name a few. Network television shows soon began to knock at her agent's door, with guest starring roles in Miami Vice and The Cosby Show. In 1988, she won the lead over 2,000 actresses to make her film debut starring opposite Eddie Murphy in the blockbuster hit Coming to America. This film has become an internationally known cult classic that has managed to cross all ethnic barriers and remains a favorite with each generation. Roles opposite veteran actors Andy Griffith on Matlock and Telly Savalas on Kojak would help Shari continue to sharpen her acting skills. She was asked to try her hand at singing when she guest starred alongside Scott Bakula in the classic television series Quantum Leap, where she showed off her vocal ability playing the role of Violet Walters, a club owner in the 1950s. Shari has been in many projects, including All My Children, 413 Hope Street, New York Undercover, Malcolm and Eddie, The New Love Boat, Walker, Texas Ranger, The Wayans Brothers, 10 Things I Hate About You, and Castle. She also had the opportunity to work with Academy Award winner Denzel Washington in The Preacher's Wife and Will Smith in the Wild Wild West music video. The NAACP Image Award nominee's career continues today with roles in L.A. Hair, Love That Girl, I Really Hate My Ex, The Congregation, and The Haves and the Have-Nots. Thank you so much, Shari, for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you. I really love the episode of Quantum Leap you're in, Pool Hall Blues. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got the role and a little bit about the filming of Quantum Leap?
Wow. Well, of course, the role called for a singer, and I am not necessarily a singer. You know, there are singers who act. I'm an actress that sings. I love music, and thankfully, Scott Bakula loved music as well. So he actually wrote one of the songs. But initially, going back to the audition part of it, they were asking for someone who could sing. And you know what? I just winged it. I thought, you know what? I'm going to go for it. So I did. And I was so happy to have gotten the role, because it was an amazing role to play. What a great show. It was great working for Donald Belisario. I mean, look at all the amazing shows he's done, you know, Magnum PI and, you know, all of these great shows, and really nice man to work for. Really great show. That's why I'm excited to talk about it today.
It was a great episode. I can't believe you weren't a singer, because you were absolutely amazing in that episode, especially singing live on camera at the piano with Scott.
Oh, thank you. That was, oh my gosh, how exciting was that? And I just have to say that Scott Bakula is probably, he's in like my top two of actors that are just the most amazing people on the planet. Like, he is just an amazing person on screen and off, you know, just such a gracious person, just a wonderful person to work with, and so talented. I mean, to write the music, of course, Mike Post was the music director on the show, so he had something to do with it as well. But working with Scott was great. And you have to excuse me, by the way, I'm just getting over a really bad cold, so this is not my normal voice. So please don't ask me to sing today. I mean, I could try to belt out a few tunes, but I don't know that it will sound like the original show.
You sound really good to me.
Oh, thank you, Albie.
At the beginning of the episode, the songs you were singing, did you have to pre-record those and then lip-sync to that?
Stormy Weather was the only thing that we lip-synced.
Okay.
The rest, when Scott and I were sitting at the piano, that was definitely live. So we went in studio to do Stormy Weather, and I just remember Deborah Pratt saying to me, you know, you've got to sing it from way down deep, you know? Like, she was really on me about really having a lot of meaning behind those words. And so that was my first experience being in studio and singing. And that was great. So I did lip sync the beginning of the show when I'm on the stage and that whole bit. But the rest of it was actually live. We sat down at the piano together and we just did it until it was right. But we didn't have to do a whole bunch of takes, because Scott was great.
It looked like you were really enjoying yourself while you were doing it too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a great show. I mean, if we're still talking about it, how many years later is this? It's like 25
Yeah,
years,
25.
probably, right?
Yeah.
Wow. So to still be talking about it says something. I mean, it's a great show, great concept. So I was excited to even be doing it.
What did you think of the script and the story for the episode?
I thought it was great. I mean, 1954. What an amazing time in history. That was probably the birth of the civil rights movement. It's just amazing to just kind of go back in time. I mean, the costumes and, you know, there were some things that we were dealing with. Like when I go to the bank to try to get a loan, that whole scene with Robert Gosnell playing the banker, that was pretty interesting. Like me not being able to get the loan and feeling pressured to have a mark on the club so that I could get the money to save it. It was a great, great time. Great time to, not that it was, you know, not that it was a tough time in history, but I mean, it was a great time to play, you know, as an actress, to go back in history and play a role of that nature.
Yeah, the episode had to do with racism and sexism in the 50s. How do you think, or do you think, culture has improved since then? And are those issues still prevalent today?
Well, you know, I guess if you look at the news, a lot of people will say that there, you know, it is still something that we deal with. I think, honestly, Albie, as long as people are different, there'll always be some sort of issue. You know, if somebody's taller or shorter, or, you know, there'll always be something. You know, if we were all the same color, then it would be, oh, well, that person, you know, has one arm, or, you know what I mean? So, unfortunately, when people are different, there's always going to be something. There will always be someone trying to feel better or want to feel like they're above someone else. It's unfortunate, but we are still dealing with some of these issues, unfortunately.
Hopefully it's getting better little by little.
Yeah, I would really, really like to believe that. I would really like to believe that.
You mentioned the period clothes, and I have to say one of my favorite parts of the episode is you in that dress.
Oh, yeah. The clothes are great. Wonderful costume design. I mean, as actors, when we put on costumes, it is very important. It really kind of just brings you right into the character. You know, it just kind of puts the cherry on top of everything. So I really felt the part. My hair was done a certain way, and my makeup, and just that dress, and singing on stage, and the lighting, and looking out into the audience of people who had costumes of that time and that period. It was great. Awesome.
During the filming of that episode, everybody looked like they were extremely hot and sweaty. Did they spray you down with fake sweat, or was it really that hot?
That's a really good question. As I remember it, it was more the spraying down, and it might have been a little warm on set because anytime you have a bunch of lights, it is warmer. But I think it was just to show that it was kind of like hot southern heat with, you know, the fans not helping much, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think we were pretty much sprayed down, Albie.
Was that all in sound stages?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about working with the other actors in this episode? They are all really good, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, certainly, you know, we can't mention the show without mentioning Dean Stockwell, who, I mean, I can go all the way back. I'm such a movie buff, so I just remember going all the way back to The Boy with the Green Hair. That was like 1940s or something like that. But Dean Stockwell being a veteran actor and another great guy to work with. You know, he was just so cool. Like, his whole demeanor was so cool. And again, you know, when you work with those veteran actors like Dean and Scott, it was just such a pleasure. It wasn't even a matter of someone trying to be like a star, so to speak. I mean, they're certainly stars in their own right. But what I'm saying is that on set, to work with them, you know, all of that star stuff doesn't come into play. They're there to work and make the story come to life. So just a real pleasure to work with both of them. So Dean was kind of cool, just kind of having seen him in films all my life, and there he was on set. So that was cool. Of course, Robert Gosnell, as the banker, he ended up doing the closer for many years. But interestingly enough, I have not seen anyone from the show since we did the show, except that I used to run into Scott all the time in Ralph's Supermarket. How crazy is that?
That is crazy.
Is that funny? Like, I would run into him all the time, and he would always be, once again, so kind, and he would stop and chat with me. And, you know, I haven't seen him in a while, not since I've been out of that part of the valley. But, yeah, I'm trying to think of some of the other actors on the show. Let's see, Teddy Wilson, of course, unfortunately passed away.
Yeah.
So that was kind of tough, but he was a wonderful man. And I just remember him saying, Bathsheba, like he was, when he was saying the name of his pool cue. And, that was just kind of like his character thing, but, that was pretty cool. And of course, you know what? Working with Robert Rags Woods, who was really, he really was a pool player. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Okay, he really was a pool hustler, and I think that may have been the only thing he ever did in television or film, but he was the one that set up all of those amazing shots that you see, and very nice man to work with, but aside from being the reflection in the mirror, he was, you know, I guess just they used him as a professional, you know, that was able to tell them about all these shots, but he was a nice man as well.
That's awesome. I had no idea. Your career has been amazing. I mean, to start out.
Thank you.
With one of my favorites, Coming to America. I've seen it so many times.
Oh, thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about your experience with that?
Well, of course, I did Coming to America before Quantum Leap. So I think I did Quantum Leap in like 1990. And then doing that film, I don't think any of us had any idea that it would become this amazing cult film. And like Quantum Leap, we're still talking about it 25 years later, 25 plus years. But again, another amazing experience. Costume designs were wonderful. It was just a fun movie to do. And what a great cast. Think about like Samuel Jackson, who was like the hold up guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was just like the hold up guy. Like nobody even thought about Samuel Jackson back then. And look at where he ended up. So a lot of people you can look at in that film and say, wow, you know, look at this person's career and where they went. Fun to do, and people still bring it up, and I'm glad that I'm associated with the film because it's a film that everyone loved. You know, they don't look at it and go, oh, I hated that movie. It was the worst ever. Like it's this fun, amazing movie that people still quote all the time, and it's great working with John Landis, wonderful director, funny guy, really, really funny guy. It's fun. I mean, I had a really good time. Really good time.
It still holds up. I mean, you still laugh every time you watch it, I think. At least I do.
All right. So here's something. I have not seen Coming to America in its entirety since I made it, which was
oh my goodness.
Back in 88. I have not seen it because we promoted the film. It was just pretty much me and maybe Arsenio, I think, that promoted the film. Eddie didn't really promote it at the time, but we pretty much went across the United States and to London to promote it. So I had seen it about 50 times.
Oh, wow.
Within a couple of months. So I have not seen it since. And my son has not seen it. My son is 20 years old now, but he has not seen it in its entirety. So throughout school, you know, kids would be like, hey, do you know who your mom is? And he'd be like, oh, brother, you know, who cares? Like, he doesn't even like think about it in that way. Like he's sort of like, yeah, whatever. My mom's an actress. You know, your mom's a nurse. My mom's an actress. So, yeah, he doesn't think I'm a big deal.
You got into the business through modeling.
I did. I started out as a Ford model. I was discovered by Eileen Ford back in the '80s, back in like 1984. And yeah, that is how I started my career. And who knew? Who knew that it would turn out the way that it did? I always wanted to be an actress, but how can you turn down Eileen Ford? I mean, she discovers you. What are you supposed to say? No, I think I'll pass, you know? But that was, those were fun times as well. Modeling in the 80s, that was very interesting fashion-wise, all that 80s clothing. And I worked for a lot of big companies and did a lot of beauty, like for Avon and L'Oreal. And I think it gave me some good characters, you know, for my future acting career. Met a lot of interesting people back then. Andy Warhol, like I got to hang out with him a lot, and he was very big on the scene, you know. So it was tough when we lost him, you know.
Mm.
Very tough.
Were you surprised at how quickly your career took off, or did you just think at the time that's the way it works?
I think I'm still amazed. I have to tell you, Albie, I am still wowed by all of it. I really am. And I meet people today, and I'm still such a big fan of other actors, and I still think it's a very, very big deal to me. I don't take any of it for granted, trust me.
You're involved in an organization called Saving Our Daughters?
Yes, I am. Curtis Benjamin is the founder of Saving Our Daughters, and he lost his daughter to brain cancer. Mm. And as she was going through chemotherapy and so forth, and she lost all of her hair, she was bullied by other children. And, she was a strong young girl, beautiful young girl. And she, with her dad, Curtis, he shaved his hair off, you know, as a tribute to her. And she said, you know, Dad, I want you to promise me that she knew, unfortunately, she was going to lose her life to cancer. And she said, you know, I want you to go on and make sure that nobody else is bullied again. So he just kind of carried the torch from this strong little girl. And so it's an anti-bullying foundation, and they do a lot more besides that, but I met Curtis, and through him I started working with the Boys and Girls Club as well, and so I've done a lot with them, and to the extent that I actually ended up receiving an award, the 2013 President's Volunteer Service Award from President Barack Obama.
Oh wow.
So that was a very, very big deal as well. So,
did you meet him?
I did not meet him. They sent a representative and they sent the award and all that. And I have this amazing, plaque, and it's got a letter and, my picture on it, and it's all signed by him, but I have not met him yet, but I plan to someday.
Awesome. That's a very important work. When I was a kid and when I was in middle school and high school, I was bullied really bad. And back then, you know, it was just like toughen up, kid. But now at least it's an issue and people take it seriously. And I'm so happy about that. And I'm very glad of the work you're doing with that.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, it's tough. Listen, it's happened to me as well. And it's not a nice thing. And obviously bullies, they've got their own issues and their own fears. And that's why they pick on other people. So
speaking of awards, you were nominated for an NAACP award.
Actually, I think I've been nominated twice. I think it was Hope Street, 413 mm-hmm. Hope Street, and All My Children. I think those were the two nominations. See, when you're just nominated and you don't win, it's sort of like, yeah, I think I was nominated. But when you win, it's sort of like, yeah, I won that back in 19, so such and such, you know. Yeah, but I think it was All My Children and 413 Hope Street. And I was a pretty sore loser, I have to tell you, because when I didn't win, I was like, all right, that's it. I want to go home. Like, I didn't want to sit through the rest of the award show. You know how people just sort of sit there when you're watching the telecast. They have like the screen, the television screen is like separated into four. Mm-hmm. And then the person that wins is like, woo! And then they like sort of jump out of frame and the rest of the people are sitting there clapping with like a smile on their face.
Yeah.
So I was sitting in my little square, like with a really mean face, and I wasn't clapping. And I was really mad. And then I'm serious, Abby, right after that, I was like, I want to go home. I'm like, I want to go have a knish and go home. And I'm tired. Yeah, I didn't want to sit through the rest. I'll be honest. You know, I don't know about other people, but I was pretty pissed off.
Yeah, that's honesty, because most people just say, oh, no, it was great to be nominated. And
yeah, that's a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like, if you don't win, yeah, forget it. I wanted snacks and I wanted to go home. That was it.
I don't blame you.
Because you get hungry. You're sitting there for hours with these award shows. So if you don't win, then you're pissed and you're hungry. So if they tell you, they're like, oh, it was a pleasure. Whatever. You're lying. Not true.
Well, luckily, if you do get up and leave, there's somebody to fill your seat, right?
Oh yeah, they totally have what they call seat fillers, which is convenient. And I'm sure I had one there. I don't know whether it was a man or woman or if they were in a tuxedo or a dress, but somebody was sitting in my seat because I was out of it.
That's great. Some upcoming projects you have that I'm looking forward to. Switched at Birth.
Yeah. That's exciting. See, that's what I'm saying. I know I'm using a lot of the same words, but it's all exciting. I mean, what an interesting show. These young girls that are switched at birth and they have lives that are completely turned around. And the lead actress, Vanessa Milano, lovely young lady, great cast. And so I have an upcoming guest star role on that. And I can't even tell you when it's coming out, but I do have that coming out on ABC Family, I think it is.
Okay, we'll be on the lookout for that.
Yeah. Good stuff. Please look for that.
Could you tell me a little bit about the haves and the have-nots?
Yes, I play the DA, Jennifer Salison. And the interesting part about playing that role is that it's completely opposite from what people normally see me in. You know, I'm a pretty straight shooter in a lot of my roles, and just kind of I've gotten sort of the nice girl image, especially from coming to America, that whole thing. But fortunately, Tyler Perry, I am just wowed by him. He gave me an opportunity to play the B-I-T-C-H. See, I didn't even say it because I know it's a podcast, but he gave me an opportunity to play, the B word, which is, it is just amazing. I love playing this role, and I will be returning in January 6th on OWN TV. I can officially say that Oprah is my boss since she owns OWN TV.
Wow.
And that's kind of a cool thing to say. So, yes, the premiere of the show is January 6th on OWN TV. So please watch out for that as well. I am returning as the DA, the very B-word DA. And I got to tell you, Tyler Perry does it all. He writes and he produces and he just does it with such ease and such talent that I think people, when they see this season, are going to be like rolled over. Like they better buckle their seatbelts because it is great. Like the storyline, his writing, I love picking up a script and seeing what he has in store for us because it's just such a pleasure to just open up the script and feel so comfortable with the words because it's just great writing. I mean, I can't say enough about it. It's great writing. And I have picked up scripts and said, oh, this is really crappy, but you know, I'll make it work, but that's not the case. Tyler Perry writes stuff that you're just like, you know, you're thirsting to just get out there and, you know, act it out and, just excited for people to see when it comes to screen. So please watch out for that, everybody. It's going to be a lot of fun this season.
Going back to Quantum Leap, what was it like playing Sam Beckett's granddaughter versus the love interest of the week, which is the norm?
Oh, well, it was interesting because, you know, Scott had to embrace a character much older than him, a different ethnicity. And of course, the same for me. You know, I had to look at him as not Scott, the man that he is, but the mirror image of him, you know, my grandfather. You know, I had to find those moments. I think we both had to find those moments where we were connecting as granddaughter and grandfather versus here's this hot looking young guy sitting next to me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a handsome guy. So it was those moments that were interesting to play. And I think, of course, he did a wonderful job of that. And I hope I did as well. But, and I think we found those moments, especially like at the piano, you know, when he came over to talk to me and ultimately we sang together. Here I was kind of tinkering on the piano, just sad. And, you know, he came over to console me as a grandfather would. So, yeah, it was a, It was great.
I found myself watching it because you forget that he's playing your grandfather and you guys seem to have so much chemistry. You kind of want you to kiss, but then you realize, no, that's your grandfather.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, well, who knows? You know, that's doing NCIS New Orleans. So you know what? There's still time.
Hey, there you go.
You never know. I could come back in a completely different role and be his love interest now. I mean, I don't know.
That would be awesome. I would totally watch that.
Thank you. Yeah, I would too. Like, I don't watch myself often, but I think I would watch that.
I have a silly question.
Yeah.
All throughout the episode Pool Hall Blues that you did, they keep asking him, Scott's character, if he's been eating onions again.
I know. That's
what was that about? Is that a thing?
That's
Do you know about
funny.
That?
That's funny. You know, I wish I could say that I did know what was behind that. But apparently, I guess eating onions kind of made him a little zonky, you know, because I kept looking at him in his eyes and saying, "Have you been eating onions again?" So maybe he had an allergy to them. But funny, I think I was too green of an actress back then to really ask that deep of a question, or really to look that deeply into it. But very interesting. That would be a good question for Mr. Belisario, or, you know, maybe Deborah or someone, you know, like that.
You mentioned Deborah was there to help you through the singing and like to direct you almost when you were recording.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she sure was.
Was she there for the whole episode? And did she give you any pointers? I know she wrote a lot of episodes about racism. She didn't write this episode, but like, was she involved?
She was. She was very hands-on. And it was nice because she was also very supportive throughout. And again, I wasn't too sure of myself in the singing area, but she was there from point A to point Z. So I was glad to have her. I really was, especially in studio, because that was kind of a scary experience.
Good.
It really was.
When watching the episode, there's some, let's say, words that are used because it's a period piece that we don't use today. Was that uncomfortable filming, or did anybody have issues with that at all?
No. I mean, you know, understanding the time, I mean, you're saying Negro. Nobody uses the word Negro anymore. Mm. You know, he was a Negro banker. Mm. But, you know, understanding that it was 1954, you have to make that adjustment. That was a time in history where that's the word that they use, you know. And that word has evolved to, you know, Black and African-American, but that was the word of the time.
I love that face that you made when your grandfather was calling you a business person.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's funny. Yeah, that's true, because you would say businessman, a business person, like, you know, we're talking about, again, you know, going back to the pre-civil rights era, or really the birth of civil rights, women weren't really taking such a stand, you know, they were still kind of like standing behind the man, so to speak. And I think maybe like the following year, you had Rosa Parks, I think it was 1955, like the, you know, the Montgomery bus boycott was maybe the following year in history, you know, where a woman actually took a stand and said, "I am going to sit in the front, not in the back." So that was also, you know, the beginning of women maybe having certain rights. Yeah, that would have been a very unusual thing to say, business person. So, yeah, now that you're bringing up these little things, I'm remembering.
Yeah, I just love that face. And I think you use almost the same expression again in Coming to America. I watched that last night just to refresh my memory.
Aw, that's awesome.
Yeah, again, laughed all last night watching it.
Oh, great.
Do you have any stories that, or something interesting that happened while filming this episode? I know it was 25 years ago, but anything that might give some behind the scenes insight to our listeners?
Oh, wow. I think one of the most interesting things was actually watching them do those pool scenes. I mean, those were some incredible shots. I mean, if you look at the episode, those were really structured and planned out, and they really did those shots. So that was fun to watch. And I know that in the pool hall scene, it's kind of tough to film because they were using a lot of smoke on the set. They have smoke machines that make it have that kind of hazy look, as if people are actually, you know, during that time, it was nothing for people to be sitting around smoking in a pool hall. Now smoking is not the fashionable thing to do. but they had these smoke machines going, and it's kind of tough to work with with smoke machines. Believe me, they're kind of like, but they do their best to make the actors comfortable. But that was interesting with all those smoke machines going. Let's see. I know that the pool cues that they used, like Alberta and the actual one that Scott used, was like a very, very expensive pool cue. Like, I don't know much about pool cues, but I remember, like, when he was shooting, making those shots and so forth, and I think Scott did, he did quite a bit of it himself. They would always take the pool cue, take it apart, put it back in the box. You know, it was, they took care of those particular pool cues. I do remember that. Let's see, what else behind the scenes? The guy who played Eddie was really a nice guy in real life, even though he looked kind of scary and he was very mean, but he was very nice in real life. I remember that. And that's it. I mean, aside from, like I said, Scott being one of the best people I've ever worked with in this industry, really. Really, I hope I do get to work with him again someday.
Have you ever been recognized from this episode of Quantum Leap?
Yes. I mean, strangely enough, there's such a huge cult following for this show that I have to tell you, about a year ago, well, maybe almost 2 years ago, this is a very interesting story. I actually considered ending my acting career.
Hmm.
I know that may surprise you,
yeah.
May surprise you, but you know, it was a period of time where I thought, should I still be doing this? You know, it's something that I love to do, but other things come up in life, like real life things. You know, I'm a caregiver for my mom, who's 89 years old, and there's a lot of life things were taking place. And I thought, you know, maybe I should just let it go, you know. But honestly, if something is meant to be, I'll be, you can't let it go because it won't allow you to. So here I was. This is a very funny story. I was in Bed Bath & Beyond, of all places, and I run into this guy, and his name is Vincent. I came to know his name is Vincent, but he was walking around with a parrot. I know this is going to be a crazy story. He was walking around with a parrot, of all things, and I thought that was really odd, so I walked up to him. I, you know, have a habit of talking to people, you know, randomly, so I said, excuse me, but you're walking around with a parrot. Like, what's your parrot's name? And he said, oh, my parrot's name is Radar. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Just kind of walking around in Bed Bath & Beyond. So this guy's wife walks up and she says, yeah, you know, it's my husband. And he's just like one of these guys. He's like Rain Man. He remembers certain things. And he's such a movie and television buff. And he goes, yeah, you know, you did an episode of Quantum Leap, did you? You played Violet Waters, you know, in a pool hall. And we like started rattling off this whole thing. And I go, now that's random. Like, you know, most people say Coming to America first, but
right.
He started going on about Quantum Leap and then, you know, other things. And he says to me, what are you doing lately? And I thought, oh, I'm thinking of kind of not doing this anymore, this acting thing. And he goes, oh no, you know, you can't do that. You shouldn't do that. And I said, well, my agent let me go. And that was one of the things also, Albie, that I thought, well, you know, my agent released me, and that never happened in my whole career.
Wow.
And he said, well, you know what? I'm gonna find you a guy. I'm gonna find you someone who's gonna represent you. And you know, you got to think. Here I am in Bed Bath & Beyond. I meet this guy. He's got a parrot. You know, he's going on about Quantum Leap and other things that I've done in my career that were kind of random. And so my son is looking at me like, Mom, are you sure? Like, you should be talking to this guy. But anyway, turned out to be legitimately a great guy who introduced me to. Wait for it. He introduced me to my current manager, Peter Gianni. And Peter just changed everything. We went on to do, after that, the haves and the have-nots and so forth and so on. I got to meet Tyler Perry, and the rest is history. And so many more things have happened since then. So it started with the guy in Bed Bath & Beyond with the parrot who talked about Quantum Leap. So that's a great little story to talk about. And again, you know, I have a great manager right now. Peter Gianni is awesome. And he, of course, set up this podcast with you. And I'm so happy that I had an opportunity to talk to you today.
He's very helpful.
Yeah, he is a great guy.
It's amazing how something as strange or as random as a trip to Bed Bath & Beyond can have such an impact on your life.
It can be life-changing. Isn't that funny?
Again, that's like going back to Quantum Leap. The littlest changes in time can affect everything after that.
That's right. That's right. And you got to think, this whole Quantum Leap concept happened way before, like, people often talk about Benjamin Button or, you know, that kind of thing, the time travel thing. But Quantum Leap really started it all. And, I mean, what an incredible concept. Think about it. This guy goes back in time to right wrongs. How cool is that? How cool is that?
I like it.
You know? I love it. I mean, if we could only have a real Dr. Sam Beckett, that would be very cool.
If you could talk to all the listeners right now that really love you and your character that you played on Quantum Leap, what would you say?
Well, first of all, I too am a fan of the show, and just thank you. Thank you for supporting Quantum Leap all these years. And for those of you who have supported me and my career and who love me, I love you all too. I really, really do. And you know, let's just keep this thing going. It's we've got such a cult following of the show. And I do know that it's on Netflix, although my episode is not on Netflix. So
I know.
What's up with that?
What is?
I want the fans to write to Netflix and let's get Pool Hall Blues on Netflix, because that's an episode that I think people should see for sure. But thanks for the support all these years. And again, I don't think Quantum Leap is going anywhere, but I do, like, I want to go when they have these conventions and stuff like that, I want to go to one of those and hang out with everybody. That would be great. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. I'll be there, so hopefully I'll get to meet you.
Yeah, definitely. But what a pleasure speaking to you, Albie. Thank you for taking the time to speak to me and to ask me such fun questions, and I hope you enjoyed it too.